You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag today, playing all of your voicemails. We've got some excellent voicemails to go through. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, if you want to react to anything that we've had on the show over the last week or two, hit us up with text messages and voicemails at 331-979-1369. Matt, what's going on? How you doing? So I'm going through Twitter last night, and it was kind of a slow night as far as basketball goes. And so I'm sitting here researching. I'm reading your article as well, which was fantastic, about pressure on all of these players to succeed yesterday. We'll get into that in a little bit here. But I'm going through, and I'm trying to write an article and trying to figure out something interesting to write about. And for whatever reason, I come across the idea of Zach LaVine and Andrew Wiggins, because I find that these two players, no matter what happens throughout their careers, especially early on now through the first four seasons, they're always going to be kind of tied at the hip a little bit. You think about Minnesota giving Andrew Wiggins a max contract, and then Zach LaVine goes down with an ACL, and they really just committed to Andrew Wiggins over Zach LaVine, and you know, including him in part of that trade was pretty much a no-brainer for the Timberwolves at the time. And if you go back to the trades, it was really Chris Dunn that was kind of the stopper of that trade, because the Timberwolves didn't really want to give up Chris Dunn necessarily in a trade for Butler. So fast forward to last night. And so I put a poll out to all of our Twitter followers, at Jordan C. Malley, at Locked On Bulls. And I said, who's going to have the better NBA career? Is it going to be Andrew Wiggins, or is it going to be Zach LaVine? So we're getting a couple hundred votes in and out over the course of a couple hours. I go to bed and I wake up this morning and the poll's at 3,000 votes. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like, why are there so many people that voted this? Obviously, Zach LaVine was the clear staunch winner. 68% of the votes went to Zach LaVine having the better NBA career. But then I find out Zach LaVine retweeted it last night, late last night, like NBA Twitter, for those late night people. He retweeted the poll, and then this morning, obviously this morning, by the time I got up, he had unretweeted it, but shows you that players are paying attention on social media, and they pay attention to these conversations that we're having, and also that our fans are having. And so it seems like Zach LaVine is a little bit fed up with the comparisons of him and Andrew Wiggins, and he wanted to prove to fans that, like, hey, you know, I feel like even though Andrew Wiggins got that max contract, I'm still going to come out and have the best career.
I think it's funny that LaVine retweeted it and then unretweeted it, but certainly, and maybe that had something to do with the large number of votes in his favor It wasn't the final test. It was something like 70-30 or something like that, right? In his favor over Wiggins?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe the fact that he retweeted it had something to do with it because his followers, his fans were chiming in large numbers. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with the results, but I think it's and I mean, I know that you were saying, well, it's these guys will be compared to each other a lot over the course of their careers just because they started out as teammates and kind of similar players as far as offensively gifted, but not super multidimensional offensively, and also are just kind of a ghost on the defensive end. So, I mean, right now, you can say across the board, Wiggins has had statistically the better career than LaVine. If you want to put contracts into that and comparatively who's going to have the better career based on the amount of money they get paid and whether or not they are worth that money right now, even though a lot of Bulls fans feel like paying LaVine close to $80 million over 4 years was a reach, Wiggins' contract is almost twice as bad in that sense. To me, it's really unknowable right now because they are both still very young and, you know, assuming, knock on wood, no awful career-ending injuries for either one, and LaVine can bounce back from that ACL, who knows where they end up playing most of their careers in their prime. I mean, do the Minnesota Timberwolves want to get rid of him at some get rid of Wiggins? Obviously, nobody wants to take on that contract right now, but Wiggins still has lots of years ahead of him even after that Minnesota contract will come to an end. Does Zach LaVine actually stick in Chicago and play the bulk of his career here? Or after this contract, or even before this contract winds down, do the Bulls decide that they want to really focus in on Markkanen and Wendell, and maybe Jabari pans out and they want to focus on Jabari and LaVine goes elsewhere? To me, it's an interesting poll because, as you said, they've always been compared to one another, but we have no idea where they're going to end up playing the majority of their careers. And along those lines, we have no idea if they're going to be the number one guy, the number two guy, or the number three guy as far as scoring options.
The amount of votes for Zach LaVine might come from the little bit of a bias from Bulls fans because it was retweeted by some Bulls fans. And obviously, the majority of the people that follow me are Chicago fans here, not so much Timberwolves fans. So that could have slightly skewed the poll a little bit. But I will say this, before Zach LaVine retweeted it, it was still at about a 70-30 clip. It finished at 68% for Zach LaVine and 32% for Andrew Wiggins. But you're not wrong about Wiggins either. What's crazy is, you know, just 2 years ago, Andrew Wiggins was averaging 23 points a game. So I look at that, and I know people have talked about how maybe he's not committed to winning and doesn't care about playing defense and seems to be more about himself than maybe the team. And somebody said that about Zach LaVine, too, and making a comparison to Wiggins. And I want to throw the question back at you. Is there anything that screams that Zach LaVine wouldn't be about winning and more so about himself? Because I see Bulls fans just using this, and I went back and forth on Twitter with a couple of people because I'm legitimately asking, like, why do Bulls fans feel like Zach LaVine just right off the bat seems to be more about himself than winning? Like, he hasn't said or done anything, at least in my opinion, that screams that he's more about himself, that he needs to be the number one option on this team. Do you feel similar to me, or do you feel like maybe more similar to the fans where they feel like maybe he's going to try and push himself to be the number one on this team and might ruffle some people's feathers in that locker room, or just has this unfair tag to him? How do you feel about it so
far?
Yeah,
I mean, I think I would probably lean towards your take that perception from the fan base about LaVine and his attitude is overblown, if not completely inaccurate. I mean, we saw since day one when he got traded to the Bulls that he came in and said, I want to be here. I love Chicago. It's an organization with a rich history. I want to be the new face of this franchise. But was also not just saying that, but walking the walk, showing up to Summer League right after he got traded to his new team. Through the entirety of his rehab process, before the Bulls actually brought him into action, he was on the bench, in street clothes, cheering on his young teammates every night, whether on the road or at home. Like, he's said and done all the right things as far as being a team guy. If there's something that I could point to for those of you out there in Bulls Nation thinking that maybe he's more of a me guy as opposed to a team guy, there was that recent sit-down he had with Vincent Goodwill. That was a video that they posted on NBC Sports Chicago earlier this week, where it was just a one-on-one interview, and he was talking about wanting to be you know, the main guy. And saying, obviously, you know, I'm now that the contract situation's been handled, I'm happy to be here. You know, I'm glad that we got it worked out. This is where I wanted to be. And yeah, absolutely, I want to come in and be, you know, the leader of this team, the best player on this team. He said, you don't put all that hard work and effort in to be the second fiddle, is the phrase he used. And then he also backed that up by saying, and it's not like there's anything wrong with being a second fiddle. He said there are a lot of Hall of Fame players that have come through the NBA that were the second fiddle or third fiddle on really great teams and had really great careers. Scottie Pippen is a perfect example. Played second fiddle his whole life. Hall of Famer, six rings, all sorts of accolades. Nothing wrong with being second fiddle, but... And I think Zach also kind of said, you know, it's not just me. Everybody on this young team, and this is kind of what I was writing about yesterday, has something to prove, and everybody wants to be a talented guy and a leader on this team, and, you know, he's seeing that as a positive. It's not like he's just saying, no, I'm here, I'm going to get mine, I'm going to prove that I'm worth this money that I just got, and screw everybody else. I think that that is entirely inaccurate as far as Zach LaVine's attitude coming into this season.
Yeah, and shout out to one of our listeners, our daily listeners, Tim Douglas. We had this conversation back and forth, and that's what sparked kind of my question to him. I was like, you know, you're tagging him as a guy that seems more interested in himself than winning. And I said, like, what have you heard or what have you seen that he's done to make you believe this? And he turned around and he goes, you know what? That's a great point. In complete fairness to him, it's a bias on my part. He said, I just feel like offense and shooting first type players with lack of defense fit that mold. He said it's not a fair assessment of his character, and none of his comments or actions have resulted in that. And it goes back to another action I think this summer that happened, is the fact that he signed the offer sheet with the Kings. To me, that's not Zach LaVine's fault. Like, I don't want fans to put that on him and say, like, oh, he wasn't committed to the Bulls. Well, no shit. Like, Zach LaVine wants to go out there and get paid, and the Bulls literally told him, go out and find a contract that is somewhere in your range that you think a team's going to sign you to, and we'll probably match it. And they ended up doing that. So don't put that right against Zach LaVine. If you're a Bulls fan that maybe is a little agitated by him signing an offer sheet with the Kings and saying that he thought he was going to be there, that's not really fair to Zach LaVine. And I think you're totally 100% right, Matt. If you come into this year, all these young players should all come into this year figuring that I want to be the number one guy. I want to be the leader. And that's not necessarily being sort of a me guy. It's every young guy on this team should have that mentality coming in, because realistically, who on this team has proven themselves as a legit NBA player yet and like a legit star? None of them have. So having that mindset about multiple guys, and maybe that pushes them to be even better than they are, and they'll find chemistry too. So your unfair bias against Zach LaVine as far as maybe him being a me guy, I just don't think is as exactly justified as maybe some fans feel like it should be. And so that's why I'm like, let's wait and see what he does actually on the court, see his actions there, see him for an entire season with all these young guys, and see what he actually says, you know, pregame, postgame, and what he actually says and does throughout this season. And maybe that'll paint a better picture for all of us.
And just to touch on your previous comment about the contract situation and some fans looking at that and saying Zach is selfish, he went out there and signed a big offer sheet with somebody else, that means he's not really all that keen on being in Chicago and committed to Chicago. As you said, and this is what I said soon after it happened, when fans were going nuts about it, both parties, the front office and the player, did exactly what they should have done in that situation. He thought he was worth more than the initial fair offer that the Bulls gave him, what they thought was a fair offer. And they said, if you think you're worth more than this, go out, test the free agent waters. If you find another offer sheet that's more, come back to us. We'll probably match it. That's what he did. That's what they did. So, and that is exactly what NBA free agents should do. Restricted free agents should do. And that's what the front office should have done, because they did have some leverage in those negotiations up to that point. And then I do also want to say this, because I think it's something that some Bulls fans who watch more closely as far as the X's and O's were aware of in the small sample size of games that LaVine played with Markkanen last season. As far as maybe he's a selfish player, quote unquote, there were certainly some times when LaVine and Markkanen were playing a little kind of two-man game where there was a pick and pop or a pick and roll for Markkanen, where Zach kind of just went rogue, did his own thing, and jacked up a difficult contested shot, whether it would be a three or a long two. And some he made and some he missed, but a lot of Bulls fans paying attention closely are saying, hey, dude, you just totally missed Markkanen, who was wide open on that pick and roll, or popped out behind the three and was wide open behind the arc, and you missed him there. And to me, I don't think that that was as much LaVine being a selfish player, saying, oh, well, like, he, you know, he just came back from an injury. He's going out there and he's got all this stuff to prove, so he's going to try to go out there and play hero ball. I think it more speaks to the fact that, and like, I'm not trying to be mean to Zach LaVine with this comment, but it's just kind of my observation, and it's a well-known observation. He doesn't have the highest basketball IQ. He's still a young player, and he's still got lots of room to grow. In those situations, I don't think it was Zach LaVine being selfish. I think it was Zach LaVine not being aware of his surroundings.
I felt like maybe Zach LaVine was getting the raw end of the stick as far as just because he was in a contract year because he was hurt. He didn't play all that much last year. But, man, he's here. And
well, the silver lining, apparently Bulls fans at least believe that he's going to end up having a better career than his former teammate Andrew Wiggins.
And let's be thankful that Zach LaVine is getting paid half of what Andrew Wiggins got offered and is getting paid with the Timberwolves. So I'm happy about that. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're taking all of your voicemails, all of your text messages, all of your questions. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Text messages and voicemails there. We do mailbag every single Wednesday. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, hit us up there with text messages and voicemails. You can also hit us up on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay right with us.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck and Jordan Malley hanging out with you guys on a Mailbag Wednesday, as we do every week. Again, that number to text and call is 331-979-1369. Before we get to our first mailbag, I just, you know, and Jordan, I'm sure you can echo these sentiments as well. Just wanted to say thank you again to everybody who has been using this text and voicemail line. We started up a few months ago and had no idea that it would blow up this big. We get tons of texts and calls every day from passionate fans, and not just here in Chicago and in the suburbs, but all over the place. I mean, really, truly, I mean, it makes me feel good, and it warms my heart to see all of these texts and calls coming from, hey, this is so-and-so in Seattle. This is so-and-so calling from San Diego. This is so-and-so from Florida. This is so-and-so from Australia, or all of these different crazy places. It really just does show you, with this silly little example of a mailbag text and call line, that Bulls fans are everywhere. Which I think is a rare thing in the sports world, and not every fan base has what this fan base has. So just really appreciate everything that you guys are doing on this text and voicemail line, because Jordan and I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I want to just echo that. I mean, if you're a relatively new listener this summer, we started this text and voicemail line, I think, what, 3 months ago? And it started off slow. We figured it would start off slow, but it blew up this summer. Like, the amount of Bulls fans that still want to talk about Bulls basketball in the mid-dead heap of summer, where really there isn't anything going on, is truly amazing. It speaks to the fan base of the Bulls and speaks to how popular the NBA is 365 days a year. The one thing I will say is I've noticed, and we've gotten some messages from people that listen to us internationally, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in Finland, England, wherever, and they're telling me that, I guess I didn't know this either, is that they are unable to text and leave their voicemails. So I'm going to try to set up a line. There's a couple ways to do it. I'm going to try to set up a line for those international callers who want to text and call in and be a part of the show as well. But everybody that is able to call us and text us from all around the country in the United States, it's been fantastic. And it's honestly opened my eyes to think about how many Bulls fans don't live in Chicago and live across the United States, and how big the Chicago Bulls brand is. So once again, like Matt had said, thank you guys, and continue to do this, because it's been a lot of fun, and it seems like a lot of the listeners out there really enjoy it. So we really appreciate and keep hammering those voicemails and those text messages in, because we certainly enjoy it here.
And if you've sent us a couple of texts and also maybe a voicemail and we haven't gotten to it yet for whatever reason, keep sending them in. I promise we will do our best to get to as many of these as we can. We've even dabbled in doing an extra mailbag here or there on non-Wednesday episodes, just because we've been getting so many. So we'll get to as many as we can. But it's awesome that we have this issue now where we have so many people coming in and commenting about the Bulls. that care and want to give us your takes and want to hear our takes. That they're literally, there is not enough time in a podcast to get to all of them. So with that, let's dive right into the deep end here. And speaking of Bulls fans from all over the place, this one comes to us from Philadelphia.
You guys are killing me, man. It's Hayes in Philly. I do not understand why you guys just don't shut up about trading the Holiday kid, man. Nobody cares. He's not a good player. Nobody in the NBA wants him. Why would anybody trade for him? He's fucking terrible. Stop talking about him. Nobody cares. Nobody wants him.
Thanks for the call, sir. Appreciate the blunt honesty. Jordan, you and I admittedly have talked multiple times in the recent past about the Bulls needing to get Justin Holiday off of this roster because of the backlog at his position and all the young guys that we want to get playing time, and that he's clearly not a part of this Bulls rebuild. Look, and you can touch on this too, I'm not saying the Bulls are going to go out there and get a first-round draft pick for this guy. Maybe not even a second-round pick, and certainly not like a young, talented player in return. I'm just saying, find a way to get this guy off your roster. It's not like he has absolute zero trade value. His stats last season were not good. I'll give you that. But the Bulls, I mean, there are still a lot of different ways it could happen. Maybe the Bulls just become the third team in a trade with two other teams that they need to, you know, match contracts or whatever it may be. Holiday's on an expiring deal, and he's only making like $4.3 million this upcoming season. That's not that hard to move. And if Jaren Grant can get moved, no offense, Jaren Grant, then Justin Holiday can get moved. That's all I'm saying. Look, it's not like we're going to try and get some great haul for Justin Holiday, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to talk about just finding some way to get him off your roster to open up minutes for other guys.
Yeah, I will be the first one to raise my hand when I say that maybe would have been playing Justin Holiday's trade value up just a little bit, and I can agree with you too. I dove into his stats deeper yesterday. I was going through trying to find an article, find a way to write an article about Holiday and what I feel like some teams around the NBA, especially contenders, that might want him. And I came across a lot that tells me that, the Bulls, this would have to be a move that they want to move him off the roster just more so to play guys rather than get anything for him. I mean, we're talking about a guy that shot 37% last year, only 35.9% from three. And I was telling you off air, Matt, that, you know, I threw it into an algorithm with a bunch of NBA players and see where Justin Holiday kind of sat. And the only notable names that I came up with that were in comparison to Holiday were guys like Gerald Green, who was actually the only one that was worse out of this category of guys who scored at least 12 points a game, shot 37% or more, shot 35% from three or more, and had at least 10 field goal attempts per game. So with that, the guys that were similar was Etuan Moore, Wesley Matthews, Gerald Green. All four of those guys stayed at the bottom of the category. But I look at all those guys too. Those guys are shooting way better percentages than Justin Holiday was. So thank you for the call in Philly. I get it. We won't talk about Justin Holiday anymore, but our point still remains the same is with the moves that were made over the last couple of weeks, adding Jabari Parker, signing Antonio Blakeney to a minimum, claiming Antonius Cleveland off of waivers, all of these guys play the same position. And then we haven't even touched on Denzel Valentine yet. Like, you just have a total clog at the guard position now where I just don't see it advantageous to let Justin Holiday play at all. And I get it. John Paxson has said it before that you need veterans on a team to win. Look around the league, the teams that have built rosters with players only under 25, that it more than likely doesn't work out. It doesn't seem to mesh. So you need veterans in there that know how to win, know how to teach guys. And I understand that. And Justin Holiday's on a great contract to do that.
I mean, I still think that's kind of bogus, though, because it's not like the Bulls are going to try and go win a title this upcoming season.
Totally agree.
And, hey, guess what? You still have some guys on this roster that have been in the NBA for a few seasons, at least, LaVine and newcomer Jabari among them. They need to be the new leaders. I mean, that's just what it is. It's not like you need to keep Holiday around for his leadership. Same thing with Robin Lopez. No offense to either of them. It's not like, yeah, okay, it's good to have veteran role players on a team that's going out and contending for a title. That is not where the Bulls are right now. Throw these young veterans in the deep end and let them figure out how to lead themselves, lead each other, et cetera, et cetera. That, like, the whole keeping Lopez and Holiday for their leadership thing, to me, is a non-factor right now.
And that's why I'm saying, like, Justin Holiday, for the benefit of the young Bulls on this team, should be moved just to free up some of that space to see what you have in these young guys. Like, if I have to watch Justin Holiday play 20 minutes a night, 25 minutes a night for the first 2 or 3 months, I might poke my eyes out.
Yeah, dude, I will riot if we have to watch Holiday play legit minutes, which is what I was saying. Dude, and to our caller in Philly, I don't care what they get for him. The Bulls can trade Justin Holiday for a ham frickin' sandwich, and I'll be happy that he's off the roster.
All right, here, let's get to another question. Text message from the 630. Mailbag question from Brandon in the Burbs. Let's play a game of Would You Rather. All right, so there's a bunch of different options, Matt. We'll just go one by one here. So option one, Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker have good seasons. Fred's system looks good. The Bulls are above 500 and make playoffs in a week east. Their invested money looks good, but Lowry gets lost in the shuffle and doesn't seem to progress. Wendell looks like a rookie and barely cracks the rotation. Chris Dunn is okay, but clearly not the point guard of the future. Or option two, Lauri Markkanen takes a big step and Carter looks just as good as summer league and is starting by December. KD looks like a floor general and future all-defensive player, winning 30-35 games and in the lottery again. Zach struggles and Jabari looks okay, just good enough to trick Garpax into picking up the option. The invested money looks bad. What's your preference, winning but your youngest core pieces make you worry, or losing with good core progress but bad invested money? Matt probably likes option one since it makes Garpax look good for Fred in signing the big deals. Can you guys tell me which one you'd rather pick? Matt, I'll let you hit on this first.
Yeah, you're real funny, Brandon. Hilarious. Matt's a Garpax defender. Where did this notion come from? Oh, my God. No, obviously, I prefer option two. If you've been paying attention to what I feel about how I feel about this rebuild, I would much prefer option two. Lowry takes another big step. Wendell looks like a beast. Chris Dunn looks like the floor general of the future. I want all of those things. If you read my piece yesterday, that's what I want. I don't care about the Bulls being a playoff team next season. I think it's in their best interest to be back in the lottery. As for if that happens and I'm right about Jabari and he's not a good fit and he doesn't play well and LaVine doesn't look all that well and the invested money looks bad, at least one of those two invested money situations in Jabari, you can let him go. And it would have been a mistake to sign him this season, which is what I am holding firm on right now. But even still, you can let him go. And LaVine, maybe he doesn't look all that great and the contract looks bad, but things could be worse, i.e. Andrew Wiggins. I would much rather see another massive season from Markkanen and an awesome rookie season from Wendell, make the first rookie all-NBA team just like Lowry did last season, and see Chris Dunn take a big step. And that might be the one I care about the most, is Chris Dunn actually looking like he can be the point guard of the future on this team. And I would much rather have that. Option two, absolutely by far more than LaVine and Jabari both look good and the Bulls go to the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed.
I think I'm with you too. I think everything starts with Chris Dunn, right? The entire offense, the way this entire thing's going to flow, has to flow through Chris Dunn. He's going to be your major ball handler. And I know at times Zach LaVine can do that as well. And I don't know how well Chris Dunn can play off the ball. I wouldn't really like to experiment with that idea. But let's just say for hypothetical standpoint here that everything runs through Chris Dunn. So I think the option two I like better. But the only thing about option one that has me questioning is like, okay, if Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine have good seasons, Fred's system looks good, those first two things don't necessarily, to me, correlate that Lowry Markkanen would get lost in the shuffle. If Fred's system looks good and the way that they were running it last year at times, I look back again to the winning streak that the Bulls have. If the Bulls can find a way, and if Lowry Markkanen comes back in great condition, I just don't see how Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker could have really great seasons and Lowry Markkanen just all of a sudden get lost in this shuffle and just kind of be stagnated in his second year. I feel like if those two are going to have really good seasons and Chris Dunn is going to be okay, but not maybe the point guard of the future, I feel like for those two first things that he said in option one, Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker having good seasons and Fred's system looking good, I feel like that almost has to translate to Lowry Markkanen at least having a solid year. Like, I don't see him getting lost in the shuffle of Fred's system. It looks really good. But if I have to pick between one of these two, I'm going with you again at option two. If Zach LaVine struggles next year, that's fine. Like, you still have three more years to figure out what you have in him. I don't think the jury needs to necessarily be out, or people need to make a decision on Zach LaVine next year as whether or not he's going to be a part of this core. He's got 4 years and he's only 23 years old. So to me, I still think you've got time on Zach LaVine. But I, like you said, I would rather see Wendell Carter Jr. take a great step as a rookie and Lauri Markkanen progress again and take another step in his second year. So I'm going with option 2-2, Matt.
All right. On to the next one. This text comes from the 224. Jordan, this one is kind of related to something we've talked about since the Jabari signing. We've touched on it a couple times, but this one brings up a really interesting detail and maybe conspiracy theory that I definitely want to get your take on.
I love conspiracy theories.
Hey, Matt and Jordan. Over the weekend, I was thinking about the Bulls' future and their long-term strategy, and it dawned on me that in 2020, Chicago will be hosting All-Star Weekend. Knowing that Anthony Davis will be a free agent in the summer of 2020, and that All-Star Weekend can serve as a ground for players recruiting other players to team up with each other, I have a conspiracy theory that the Bulls front office meticulously planned to be the host city solely because they wanted to recruit Davis. Garpax might not be the most respected front office throughout the league, and Reinsdorf has somewhat of a reputation for being cheap, but getting Lowry or Zach to be in that All-Star game and pitch Davis on being a Bull, as well as remind him how great his hometown of Chicago is, would be a win for the front office, for the fan base, for the city at large. I'm sure I'm coming off wild with this conspiracy theory. Regardless, would love to hear what you guys think. Okay, I love this conspiracy theory, Jordan. I mean, you and I talked on the idea of maybe signing Jabari, and if Jabari looks good, Jabari can help recruit AD in a couple of years if the Bulls end up keeping Jabari. That's one conspiracy theory. This one about All-Star Weekend in Chicago 2020, I love that. I don't know if the Bulls front office actually put that into their thoughts when going out and getting the All-Star Weekend festivities to come to Chicago, which is they've been hesitant to do for years and years. Last one was 88 when MJ and Dominique Wilkins were going at each other in the dunk contest. 88 is the last time the All-Star Weekend was in Chicago. And it's mostly because Reinsdorf doesn't like it. Reinsdorf has said he doesn't like it because basically the NBA takes over your stadium, takes over your city, and a lot of the season ticket holders for the Bulls, their loyal fan base, get displaced. And most of the tickets go to the NBA itself to distribute. That's why Reinsdorf has always said he doesn't like it. The detail we heard is that his grandson, Joey, I believe is his name, the son of Michael Reinsdorf, president of the Bulls currently, son of Jerry, said like, hey, Grandpa, we should have an All-Star Weekend, because he's been going to a lot of the All-Star Weekends with Michael Reinsdorf, his father, and enjoying them, and is saying like, hey, why the hell do we not have the All-Star Weekend in Chicago? So that appears to be, at least to the public perception, why they finally caved. Also, apparently, Mayor Rahm Emanuel was very big on it and pushing them hard to give Chicago 2020 when a lot of other cities were gunning for it. But I love this conspiracy theory about pitching AD at All-Star Weekend in 2020. Jordan, what do you think?
I just go back to what Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Reinsdorf have said. Like, Michael Reinsdorf's son, Joey, was the reason why I think Jerry started to think about this even more. You know, we talked about how Jerry Reinsdorf said it has to have a benefit for the Bulls, you know, and for this city. And I think another thing, too, just reading through some of these articles about the All-Star game is like, Rahm Emanuel also had a huge play in this and talking and calling Adam Silver multiple times to even get Chicago considered for the All-Star game. And I think it ultimately came down to, you know, they give you the excuses of, oh, well, our season ticket holders won't be able to go to the All-Star game because a lot of those seats will be taken from people all around the world, blah, blah, blah. Just kind of BS answers that I don't think really fulfill whether or not they like having the All-Star game here. I'm not truly buying into the idea that this is a platform to recruit Anthony Davis. And if it is, man, I still go back to the fact that I don't see Anthony Davis leaving the Pelicans unless he gets traded. Because think about all the money that's going to be on the table for Anthony Davis. Like, you've had a bunch of injuries too early on in your career. And I get it. You're like, when you're healthy, you're one of the top five players in the league. I get that. But you got to consider your injury history, too. And you're going into what? Being, how old is he going to be? 25, 26? At the time of his free agency, he's going to be right in the middle of his prime. So I look at that. I don't think this is an idea to pitch. It's certainly a great conspiracy theory. But I legitimately think that, you know, the talking with not only Adam Silver and what this could do, and also gauging how the NBA has exploded as far as content goes, as far as awareness, and as far as popularity goes. Like, it makes sense. If the Bulls are trying to rise and be a competitive team and sort of match that timeline in 2020, I feel like they want to not only make this team better, but also put them back on the map from some of these embarrassing seasons that they have, and just kind of maybe put some positive spin on the Chicago city and also the team too in general. So if I had to pick, like, it's a fun conspiracy theory to talk about, but I don't think it necessarily played into the factor that the Bulls were going to host the All-Star game in 2020. I think just Jerry Reinsdorf looked at the league and look how much money that they could make off a weekend here, and looked around at some other places that don't even have NBA teams. And that's funny because his grandson brought that theory up, is like, you know, New Orleans has held it twice. Houston's held it twice. And Las Vegas.
Vegas
didn't even have a team and they held it.
Right.
So to me, it's a great conspiracy theory, but I don't see it as this like conspiracy theory, this whole idea that we're going to plan for 2020 and try to drop everything on Anthony Davis to come home and return. I can't buy into that. I love the idea though.
I know. just to touch on a quick detail from what you were talking about, Anthony Davis turned 25 in March. So free agency summer of 2020, he will be 27. So definitely still prime, but with a long list of injuries in his rearview mirror, that it's gonna be an iffy how much of his prime does he have left kind of situation. But I still look. I don't think that Garpax actually were thinking that far ahead if they were at all involved in the hosting All-Star discussions. And Jerry Reinsdorf probably doesn't even know who Anthony Davis is, if we're being honest. But I love the conspiracy theory, and I love that you texted to us about it. So thank you, because it just piqued my curiosity.
I just
want to
put one detail out there for you, is because in the article that the Chicago Tribune wrote, this coming from Casey Johnson back in November 10, 2017, he talks about a key detail about Rahm Emanuel actually being one of the biggest pushes for this. And that makes sense. Obviously, Rahm Emanuel wants this to come to the city. Think about how much money that would generate for the entire city as a whole.
Well, I mean, the NFL draft being in Chicago, the NHL draft being in Chicago in recent years, it's a huge, you know, economy booster for all these people that flood the city and spend a bunch of money, hotels, food, all entertainment, all that
stuff.
So
not only was it, I think, a decision and a push by Rahm Emanuel, but it was also kind of an agreement with Jerry Reinsdorf and just kind of opening up his mind as far as saying, like, you know, maybe it won't benefit Bulls fans directly, you know, in the city, going to the game, whatever it is. But as a whole and as a brand and for the NBA at 2020, I think this is a good idea as a whole.
Moral of the story here, Jordan, before we move on to our next one, is that the Bulls need to send an All-Star to 2020 so that they can at least be there with AD and plant that worm in his ear. Because you never know.
So
after
whether
that.
It's Wendell Carter Jr., whether it's Lauri Markkanen, whether it's Zach LaVine, or if Jabari Parker signs an extension here, or if they go out and get a star before 2020, if they go out and trade for somebody. So I think that's more the goal than anything else, is you've got to get at least one of your players in the All-Star game. And if that doesn't happen, that's not good. Like, if you're hosting the All-Star game and you don't have a player in it, that might not be a good look, but I'm saying there's still, you know, handful of years before that comes up, and we have to regularly monitor whether or not one of those guys is going to be an All-Star.
Cautiously optimistic that the Bulls are going to send at least one player to All-Star weekend in 2020. I think that can happen.
All right, let's get to our next voicemail here. This one comes from Seattle, from the 206.
Hey, just leaving a message about what the fold moves this summer might entail for their team and forward. As far as, you know, a championship, that we need an MVP-type player. And the Anthony Davis is the big move, obviously. If Giannis or someone else, you know, gets bored in their situation, there's really only a couple people, though, that are able to be moved, you know, to be a free agency or trade or whatever, that would give the Bulls a chance to win. You know, like Harden and people like that aren't leaving their situation. Kawhi is probably actually looks like he's going to like it in Toronto. That's going to be another MVP caliber player that, you know, we'll have to go up against in the East. You know, we're going to need that player to put us over the top to go you know, to win a championship. Markkanen, Parker, Levine, all of them could reach their top potential, and it still probably wouldn't be a championship-level team, because none of those players are really transcendent, and you need that one transcendent player, you know, like, there's always, you know, a handful of them in the NBA, so. That's my opinion. This is Paul, lifelong Bulls fan, listening to the podcast the last year or two, living in Seattle, but originally from Chicago. Keep up the good work, dude.
All right, Matt, it kind of goes in line with, and thanks for the call from all the way from Seattle. Appreciate it. This goes in kind of in line with what I was talking about over the last couple of weeks, you know, saying that I feel like the Bulls are more so in position to go out and trade for a star rather than get one in free agency. And just kind of the way free agency has gone over the last few years, where players are texting each other, players are talking to each other and trying to recruit each other to different teams, like behind GM's back. It's not the way it worked when we were talking about it, like pre-2010, before LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all talked about pairing up and going together. The NBA has changed in that way. It's like players have started to communicate with each other about where they would like to play, what's the best situation for multiple of these guys. My question just goes back to me is like, free agency, who do the Bulls have right now next year that could pitch, hey, come here and play with us, we'll be competitive. In 2020, who do the Bulls have right now that has those connections that can say, hey, come here and play with us? The way that LeBron's able to do that with guys, the way that Steph Curry was able to do that with Kevin Durant, the way that Russell Westbrook was able to do that with Paul George. The list goes on and on. But still, the fact remains that I feel like outside of Zach LaVine, there isn't really one guy that has those connections around the league to superstars that could convince them to come here and play. So that's why I'm turning it on its head and saying, you know what, maybe the best route is to do what the Houston Rockets did and put themselves in a position where they can trade for a superstar should one come available. And I think that's probably your more likely scenario than going out and trying to cast a reel in this big free agent market in 2019 or 2020 and try to find a way to grab one of those guys. Because if you can't grab one of those guys, you're going back to the way we did this before. Tier 2, Tier 3 players with all of that money and all that cap space to be used. So how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of goes back to a conversation we were having last week about what you need to contend for a title in the NBA. And you need a lot of good players, but at least one of them has to be a superstar. I'm not talking random all-star whatevers. No offense to DeMar DeRozan and his ilk, but clearly they never got it done in Toronto, and he got shipped off. I'm talking bona fide superstars. I said in an episode last week, you look back, one team in the last, 20 or 30 years won a title without any superstars, the 2004 Detroit Pistons. Everybody between then and now that's won a title has had at least one superstar on their team. Going back before that, the Lakers of the early 2000s, the Spurs that had Duncan and Robinson that won it in the lockout shortened 99 season, Jordan and Scotty, six of those years in the 90s, the Rockets that had all of those stars, including Hakeem Olajuwon. Before that, whether it was the Celtics or the Lakers in the 80s, superstars, Bird, Magic, Worthy, Kareem, all those guys. You need superstars to win in this league, plain and simple. So either the Bulls have to hope that they have one in the making already, and the leading candidate there is probably Lauri Markkanen, unless Jabari has a huge bounce back from two ACLs or LaVine has a huge leap in his abilities. Right now, most of Bulls fans are hoping that Lauri turns into a borderline all-star superstar player in his prime, and he's got some years to get there. It's either you have to hope that the Bulls have one of them in the making, or, as you said, they have to go out and get one. The Bulls have repeatedly failed to land the biggest names in free agency in the summers when they have this money to spend. And some of those times when they failed, they have already had a superstar in the fold. Summer of 2010, Derrick Rose looked like one of the best young up-and-coming players in the league. And the Bulls still got spurned by all the big names. So If that's not what can get it done, as you were saying, maybe finding a team that is ready to move on from their star and willing to trade one away is the most likely outcome.
Question real quick, just to follow up on this, Matt. Can you win a... Do you feel like this Bulls team, if you had to move maybe a guy like, say, they re-sign Parker to a long-term deal, or whoever, like Zach LaVine even could be thrown in this idea, or Chris Dunn. If you went out and got like a guy like maybe John Wall, maybe John Wall becomes unhappy with what's going on in Washington. Maybe you think about looking at Damian Lillard out in Portland. If they become tired of their situations, do you feel like that would move the needle for any of these guys? Because I'm trying to think outside the box here. Guys that maybe are a little bit agitated with their situations, just not getting to that next level. And I think about Damian Lillard just because of he's been massively underrated, man. Like, he wasn't able to get to an all-star game, I think. What was this? This was the first year that he was able to get into an all-star game, and he clearly had the stats and had the production to back it up. So maybe he looks to maybe come to the East. And all I'm saying is, like, the Bulls need to be prepared because things could happen. Like, people are already talking about the Knicks as being a destination for guys like Kyrie, for Jimmy, for maybe even Kevin Durant. So you've got to be in a position where if something like that happens and starts to shift the East a little bit more, the Bulls got to be prepared to say, you know what, we got to really step on the accelerator and find a guy to come in and be able to compete with those teams. You don't want to fall into this category where you're kind of like 1 foot in being competitive and 1 foot out and kind of doing this on the fly. I think the Bulls are aware of that too. So what do you think about a guy like John Wall or Damian Lillard, should they, or somebody in that realm to come in here? You think that moves the needle at all as far as being productive, being competitive in the next few years? Maybe it's 2019, maybe it's 2020 when these guys get sick of their places, but does that move the needle for you at all, or do you need somebody bigger than those two guys?
I mean, neither of them, John Wall or Dame, moved the needle for me that much as far as how competitive the Bulls would be. John Wall's 27. Damian Lillard just turned 28, so they're right around the same age, in their prime, but not for a whole lot longer.
True.
To me, those are two interesting names for a guy that the Bulls, if they could find a way to bring them to Chicago, would be enough of an enticement for a bigger star in their prime to say, oh, the Bulls got Dame? Or, oh, the Bulls got John Wall? I'd love to go play with that guy. And then they might be able to, as you were saying, who do the Bulls have now that can lure the free agents next summer, 2 summers from now? Do they have any of those guys? Dame, John Wall, some of those second-tier stars that you're talking about, if you add one of them to your young core, then all of a sudden the Bulls might have, after a season, something like somewhere between a 45 and 50-win team that a big bona fide superstar could look at and say, oh, if I go play with that team that's got Dame or Wall on it with Markkanen and with those other young pieces, then, yeah, I could see the Bulls being championship contenders. But no, for the guy to be Dame or John Wall or somebody, a second-tier star like that, no, I don't think that moves the needle all that much.
What's up, fellas? This is Jeremy from Idaho calling. Hey, you guys have touched on it here and there. Can I request that you kind of go into the starting lineup and throw Hutchinson in and talk about their positional flexibility? For example, we know Carter could play the four. Could he spot the three? Could Markkanen spot the five? And similar to that. Anyway, I really love the show. Thank you guys for the content.
All right, obviously, thank you for the call once again. Jeremy is obviously a staunch and likes watching Chandler Hutchinson. And obviously coming from Boise State, so...
From Boise State.
I said Boise again.
You said Boise, man. I was right there ready to correct you.
All right, so what do you think about this, though? Like, the realistic expectations for Hutchinson coming in this year. What are the realistic expectations? Do you see him being able to play the three or the four? And I know it's kind of clogged with Jabari now, but maybe... Say those things don't work out, like... Maybe the Bulls move Robin Lopez and Wendell Carter Jr. is slotted at the five. Lowry is slotted at the four. And maybe there's some struggle for Parker early on at the three. And they have to find a way to adjust that.
Maybe.
I don't know. You know.
Maybe.
I'm willing to give it a shot, man. Like, I'm not saying it's going to work, but I'm willing to give it at least a shot. Let's say it doesn't turn out well, but the Bulls still want to find a way to be productive with Parker on the floor, with Markkanen on the floor. this is where I think Hutchison steps in. And while I think he might be a part of that second unit, it all depends on, I think, training camp. I think that's really going to depend on whether or not Hutchison gets minutes early on. And there could be a way that if Hutchison doesn't really move the needle for Fred Hoiberg, like, he might not be guaranteed minutes this year. Like, think about the clog that the Bulls have if they keep the roster the same that it is. I know you don't have that many wings as far as depth goes there, but throwing a guy out there like Chandler Hutchison, I don't know if that's in Fred Hoiberg's best ideas in the world, but what do you think about that? What do you think? What are the realistic expectations for Hutchison if he is in a rotation with guys like Dunn, Levine, Markkanen, and Carter on the floor?
Well, yeah, I mean, if the question is, do we see Chandler Hutchison starting at any point this season, I would say barring injuries and trades, no, I don't.
Yep, same here.
I think he has potential. I think he was a quality pick at 22, and I think he's going to be a bench player this year. And Denzel Valentine, you didn't even say his name when talking about the people in that, you know, combo shooting guard small forward spot that are going to be fighting for minutes. Denzel's not going to be a starter this season either, as much as he may want to be. With Levine at the two and now Parker at the three, Denzel's not starting. So I see Hutchison trying to fight Valentine for those minutes at those spots coming off the bench. And as far as like positional flexibility, I think that Hutchison can be a shooting guard and a small forward in this league. I think he can play both positions. The interesting part of this hypothetical that the caller posed is as far as maybe moving the front court guys around more. I think somebody else texted us about this that we didn't get to, but maybe the ideas of Markkanen playing some five so that you can have some looks where Parker is in fact playing the four, and maybe, well, you know, how can Wendell play the four? As far as the starting lineup, Hutchins is not there. I think they're going to start with Rolo at center over Wendell. I would love to see them find, and this goes back to our holiday conversation to start the show, or to start mailbag. I would love to see them find a way to ship Lopez off if Wendell proves himself in early season minutes that he's ready to start alongside Markkanen. But Fred has to do some tinkering because I think Parker is more effective as a four than a three, and he's better suited at the four than the three. I don't think that will necessarily... Say Hoiberg does find some lineups where it's, you know, Markkanen at the five and Parker at the four. I don't necessarily think that opens up a starting spot for Hutchison.
Can I say something that I think is going to make some Bulls fans irritated? So there's multiple reports out there, and you can go look through the articles. Mark Schanowski has written about it. Vincent Goodwill has written about it. Some people here and there in the Tribune, too, is like, what the front office thinks about Lauri Markkanen is they think in his prime, or getting just to his prime, say 5 years down the road, they still think he can play the five in a modern NBA system. So I always keep that in the back of my mind. And now, while plans can change, obviously, if Wendell Carter Jr. turns out to be something spectacular, things can change. But that has me thinking, like, even more goes back to what could be part of a trade piece to get a superstar. If they feel like Lauri Markkanen can play the five, and maybe this is in line with the Anthony Davis conspiracy theory, is like, if Lauri Markkanen can play the five and that's where they see him in the future, and that's something that I think Bulls fans need to keep in the back of their mind, is like, the front office has said multiple times that they think Lauri Markkanen can play the five in a future NBA system and be competitive. I don't know if you feel the same way about that or not.
We've seen him bulk up his frame this summer. Yep. Already. He's added 10 or 15 pounds of muscle to his frame. So he's on his way to being able to, you know, contend with some of the bigger bodies down in the post and bang on the glass. Like, I still don't know if I'm convinced that is his best suited position. You know, if it's a matter of how you phrase it. Can Lowry, in certain situations, in certain matchups against certain opponents, play five if the Bulls are going small? Yeah, I think that exists in his future, realistically. Is it his best suited position more so than the four? No, I would staunchly disagree with that right now.
Same here. And maybe the Bulls are just looking super far ahead in what they already see. But like you said, I think there's some question marks as far as him being a rim protector, him also being able to rebound on the defensive side of the ball. So I think it's still too early to tell, but I just want Bulls fans to keep that in the back of their mind. And I'm going to attach some quotes on Twitter too, to the bottom of our episode when we release this, so you guys can see that I'm not kidding when I say that the front office has been noted that they feel like Lauri Markkanen can play the five in the future. So back to Hutchinson as a whole, just to wrap this up real quick. I'll tell you what I think is going to be that second unit so far coming into the season as it stands right now. It's going to be Cameron Payne at the point. It's going to be Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, and Wendell Carter Jr. I honestly think that's what you're going to start as your second unit coming into the season. I think Robin Lopez, unless Wendell Carter Jr. just has an absolute unbelievable training camp and comes in and does beat Robin Lopez out, I hate to say this, but I really do think the Bulls are going to start Robin Lopez to start the season and just see what they can do with Wendell Carter. And maybe he gets... maybe Wendell Carter Jr. plays well enough where they've got to force the hand on Fred Hoiberg and say, you know what, you know, he needs to start and this is what we need to do. But if we're looking at a second unit, at least early on, I think Hutchinson gets squeezed out. And like you were saying too, I think it's going to be a battle between him and Denzel Valentine to find out who's going to get those minutes. If Justin Holiday is still on this roster, if Justin Holiday is not on this roster, then you can talk about a few different things. Denzel Valentine playing the two and then Hutchinson being your three, your wing player there. I think the one thing that I really like about Hutchinson, and I think he can provide off the bench and in spurt minutes, is being able to push the floor. We've always talked about that. His defensive rebounding and the ability to run the floor with the ball, I think is huge for a guy in the second unit. And if you've got guys like Denzel Valentine, who shot 38% from three last year, if you've got guys like Carter who can step out and knock down the three, if you got Bobby Portis too who can step out and knock down the three and can score, Hutchinson's going to be valuable, I think, this season. It's going to be whether or not he can adjust to playing against NBA players.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. All right, we're coming up on an hour here, so let's finish up with this one, which is fun. This comes to us from Ethan in Winnebago, and actually the primary part of his question is about Lauri Markkanen. And what we're expecting from him next season. We're actually going to save that because, you know, Jordan and I were planning on having a more in-depth conversation about Lauri just because he's kind of been the missing guy from this offseason as far as who people are talking about. So we're going to get to that at length tomorrow, Ethan, so hang tight. But he follows it up with Lauri has the best nickname out of his draft class, right? He says there's Spida, Donovan Mitchell, which is okay, but if you read about how he got the name, it's kind of weak. There's John the Baptist, a.k.a. John Collins. There's the Fro, Jarrett Allen, who posterized Markkanen last year. And the one that comes the closest is Frankie Smokes, which is the Frenchman over there at MSG. In my opinion, the finisher, heck, even the derivative nickname Lauri Legend, is better than all of those. I might be biased, though. What do you think? So, does Markkanen have the best nickname of his rookie class? And also, let's open it up to, does he have the best nickname on this Bulls roster right now?
I'm going to be lame here, and I still think, just because of, I don't know what the backstory is, and I would love to get it, but why do people call Wendell Carter Jr. Oatmeal? Like, but that is my favorite nickname on the Bulls. If we're talking about Bulls nicknames, I just think it's so odd, and it's just, to me, it's kind of funny. Just like, the nickname Oatmeal doesn't scream like superstar or anything like that, but I want to know what the backstory is because I don't know what it is. I think I'm with you though. Like the finisher, there's a couple. Oh, the Finn Reaper too is another nickname too that you could throw in there.
But that's kind of stepping on the heels of KD. You know,
that's true.
The Slim Reaper. I always liked Durantula more than I liked the Slim Reaper.
Yeah, and see, Durantula to me is like a spin, like Donovan Mitchell's nickname is kind of a spin-off of that. I know they're not the same player, but still, like, that sort of nickname is kind of a spin-off of what KD has. But I'm with you, too, and it may be biased, but I like Lowry's nickname. And, like, you've already told me, too, that, like, Lauri Markkanen has trademarked that nickname already. It seems like he's going to be putting out merch, too. And if you go to his YouTube page, he actually has a YouTube page if you're curious.
Yeah.
He's got logos for himself already. He's got a ton of content on YouTube for himself. So I'm curious to see what he puts out here this season. And we already talked about Bobby Portis having the crazy eyes shirts.
I was going to say, if we're talking about Bulls players' nicknames and merch right now, Crazy Eyes might be, I might like that even more than the finisher. It is such a good nickname for Bobby.
It's so good that he embraces it.
I know, exactly. Like you could try to run from that, or you can steer into the skin, essentially, is the saying. And I love that Bobby has totally steered into it because dude's got crazy eyes. And I love that he's embracing it. And it is such a good nickname. It's so simple, but so accurate.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We didn't get to a lot of other text messages and voicemails. I think we're going to carry this conversation over to a segment on Thursday and also on Friday. Definitely want to touch on Lauri Markkanen because I feel like we've kind of gone away from his conversation over the last few weeks, and maybe that's just because he's flying under the radar this summer. But certainly we'll talk about expectations for next year and what we see in Lauri Markkanen in this game. So I have that conversation tomorrow, as well as voicemails and text messages too. So continue to put those in because we will play them Thursday and Friday's episode if we get ones that we feel like have good conversation or good voicemails. So hit us up at 331-979-1369. You can leave all of your text messages, your voicemails there. You can hit us up on social media, too, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Melly, and at Bulls underscore Peck on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. If you want to leave us a review, we would love that, too, on iTunes. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over at Locked On Cubs and Locked On Bears have great content coming up. The MLB trade deadline's coming up as well as Bears training camp started last week. So follow all of those, subscribe to those shows if you are a Chicago sports fan in general. They do great work over there. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com